host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me in studio here for a special edition of the show, the final episode of the season, and we're going to try to end it in style. It's my good buddy, Brendan Dillon. Brendan, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I appreciate you having me, man.
So yesterday we did a two-part review of all the activity of the offseason, and I was kind of, you know, I was a little cautiously teasing this. I didn't want to give up too much away because I wasn't sure if we'd be able to make it work. So I was like, this might be the last show of the season. Hopefully we'll be back tomorrow with one more. So I'm glad we're finally going to do this. Let's start with this. I got a list of topics here that I want to run by over the next 50 minutes. Let's start with this. I believe this is your, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your first sort of real experience dabbling in the UFA market, right? Because as far as I know, and I did a little bit of research, I didn't know this, you know, I'm a broadcasting professional. You had signed deals previously with both the Sharks and the Capitals in like the days leading up to the market opening up. You never actually made it all the way to the free agent frenzy. So this was your first sort of experience dabbling with the open market, getting courted by teams, trying to kind of sort through different offers. Kind of just talk me through that process and sort of what it was like. Obviously, every player is going to have different sort of things they're looking for, kind of like a list of what you sort of prioritize in whatever market you go to. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious on what yours was and sort of how you came to this conclusion.
It's craziness. Craziness, I would say. As you said, this is my first time testing the UFA market. Love my time in San Jose, love my time in Washington. So I was almost too big of a wussy to do it. You know, you hear some horror stories of free agency, and you also hear some super, super successful ones. And I'm sure in any facet of business, you want to try and hope that you experience the more positive ones. And as soon as kind of, you know, talks at the end of the season, you kind of come to realization with Winnipeg, I wasn't coming back, and they've got their business to handle. And for myself, of course, I want to win a Stanley Cup. I was very fortunate to have the season I did and the season that we did as a team, actually, to kind of help individuals look better. And you're anxious, you're stressed, you're also excited at the same time. I think that's something for players is. I haven't heard anything yet from Steven Stamkos, but for him, his first training camp now, not in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy, right?
I think you get into a routine, right? You guys are such like creatures of habit in terms of like you get up in the morning, especially if you're at home and you're in your city you're playing in, and you get to the rink at a certain time. You go to your same spots afterwards.
You get your same Starbucks run. You got your same, same guy you say hi to in the morning. You got the same. It's for me now. I've been traded before, going now into my fourth team.
Yeah.
No, fifth team.
Dallas, San Jose, Washington, Winnipeg, and New Jersey. Yeah,
lucky number five. Jersey number five.
I told
five.
You there'd be no math on this show.
Yeah. My mom was a high school math teacher, so I better get that simple one right. But there's some excitement involved too, and you just never know, am I pricing myself too high in the market? Am I not enough? It's not like there's... Every single left-handed defenseman is talking amongst each other, being like, "Hey, what are you signing for? Hey, what team are you?"
You guys don't have a group chat?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that might help and make things a little bit easier. And but there's definitely a lot of stress involved. And you trust your agent. You trust the season that you had personally, and for myself and where I'm at in my career, the kind of boxes I wanted to check and tick off. Chance to win. It's crazy that it's almost going to be 10 years since I played in the finals against Pittsburgh. And here I was thinking I was just the other day, but literally 8 years ago. Then you look at the role you're going to have amongst the team. Is there four other similar players to Brendan Dillon that I'm just kind of going to fall in line? Do I feel like I can be of value to that team? And then kind of once it got there to July 1st and other teams' offers started to kind of come in and the legitimacy of them, it's just overwhelming because then you're like, okay, I was fortunate to have a good amount of offers. And then you talk it over with, I talk it over with my wife, and then you talk to your parents, and then geographically, where are you going to be at? I wasn't even really looking at what the rest of the divisions are. All I've ever really known for, I think it's 11 of my 12 seasons were all in the West. So
yeah.
I could tell you anything you wanted to know about the Pacific and the Central, but for me to name all Metro teams, it might take me a second.
Right.
But when Jersey came, I mean, I know there was interest from them, you know, at the trade deadline this year. And of course, with Winnipeg, we were having a strong season and, you know, they weren't going to be moving any UFAs. And then just to feel valued and feel that you can be a big part of that team and something that, you know, they're maybe looking for the style of play. And you see how aggressive they were with trading for Markstrom, and you hear the rumors and you read on Twitter Pesci might be coming there, right. And then even the moves that they've talked about and done with Sheldon Keefe coming in, just a lot of excitement, and that's the type of thing I want to be a part of. You know, I want to be a part of something special. And then, you know, you kind of get into the financial part of it and the term and this, and a lot of the teams were coming in fairly similarly. So, you know, let's get this thing printed off, signed up and ready to rock and roll. And then there's the sense of relief. So, the highs of highs, the lows of lows, there's just, you talk to guys that I played with in the past or buddies, and sometimes guys get one offer. Sometimes guys don't get any offers. Yep. Some guys get the 15, 20 offers. And so you hope to be somewhere in between there. And it was just super fortunate to be a Devil.
Well, like you said, you had a good year, and especially a player of your specific skill set, I'd say, as a, you know, more so defensive, not to take anything away from some of the goals you scored this season.
Dimitri, it's not a big deal. I scored 8 this year.
for those counting at home. But with the size and kind of the playing style, I think it's interesting to me, and we can talk more about this a little bit here. As the league has sort of gravitated towards, everyone kind of talks about, like, you know, how it's such a skill game now. Size isn't that big of a deal, especially for forwards, right? You're seeing kind of undersized guys come in and just do crazy stuff with a puck on a daily basis. This sort of YouTube generation that's been on its way, right, of watching some of the guys that came before them doing all this stuff, the highlight reels on YouTube, then practicing that at home and at the rink with their friends, and then actually starting to incorporate it in games. We still, especially this offseason in particular, I thought we saw teams really place an emphasis on, like, size on the back end and, like, committing both money and term to that all across the league. And that was a thing. So I'm with you on the sense that, like, you never know what's going to happen on the market, right?
Yeah.
Opens up, crazy things can happen. I'm sure there's all sorts of horror stories, as you said. Also, with the cap going up and the fact that you are the defenseman you are, I feel like you were in a pretty good spot. I know you're kind of a humble guy here, but...
I appreciate it. I mean, our team was so solid in Winnipeg, and I think guys talk about it all the time, but when you have a good team, it makes everybody look better individually. And, you know, it was a tight group of guys there. We made some great moves at the deadline, you know, Toffoli and Monahan coming in. And, it was just, we were a good hockey team. And I think a lot of guys had, you know, career years. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck wins the Vezina. Mm-hmm. We won that, the William Jennings, which, Helly gets to put that up in his trophy case.
Yeah, but I feel like the defensemen should all get a little share.
Trust me, we've been giving Helly some crap over the years that, you know, like, hey, you know, we were the ones blocking shots in front of you, and of course he saves us quite a bit back there. So who are we to get on his case about it? But for myself and my game, I mean, I'm always trying to get better. I take a lot of pride in playing against other teams' top lines. Being hard to play against, physicality, but at the same time, and over the years playing with the Erik Karlssons and the Brent Burnses and watching on the left side the Paul Martins and Mark Edward Vlasics and these super, you know, not to take anything away from the, you know, Paulie and Mark Edward Vlasic, but a lot of times they're complimentary guys, right? Mm-hmm. And they're big pieces. I mean, I think when Paul Martin was leaving San Jose, when he was done, like his D partners over the years were like, it was like Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Letang, and then Brent Burns. Yeah. Like,
not bad.
Not bad guys to be playing with and learning from and, you know, being with. And for myself, like I love being a hockey player. Yeah. Like there's nothing better out there. Practices, like, you know, we had a great group in Winnipeg. You know, guys working on things after practice, getting better. And I'm sure from the sounds of it in Jersey, there's no way that those guys all just get those skill levels overnight, right? Like they're, I'm sure, working on it and doing things in practice. And so for myself, just to try and add to my game, and once free agency's kind of done and you got the contract sorted out, now it's like, okay, we can just play hockey,
get the business,
keep working on it, and get ready to rock and roll.
So the reason why I kind of teed it up that way was I know that, you know, you had some interested parties that came calling for your services. You had a couple competitive offers. What sort of put New Jersey. You've hinted at it a little bit, but I want to get into specifically some of the conversations you may have had with them so far, whether it's with Tom Fitzgerald or whether it's with Sheldon Keefe, just in terms of like what I think you want to know as a player, what the plan is for how they're going to use you, right? Because I imagine from a team perspective, it's like you identify guys you want, but you're having conversations along the way of like, all right, if we do get this player, how do we set them up for success? And I know that's a big thing for you. I know hockey players are very humble in terms of always putting the team first. And, yeah. and if you have team success, everyone is going to come along for the ride, sure, right? Sort of the rising tide element.
Yeah.
But also, I think as a player, when you're deliberating all these offers, you kind of want to know, all right, like, how are you going to use me? Who am I going to play with? Whether the team, the way the team plays philosophically kind of meshes with what I can provide. Am I going to be able to do this? Because sometimes you see players get traded or signed and then it's just an awkward fit, right? And the guy never gets to really play his game. And then all of a sudden he's unhappy or traded. And you obviously want to avoid that. What were those conversations like with New Jersey in terms of sort of what do they have a plan in place for you? Is there something that you think you could specifically sort of fit in with what they already have now? Like kind of what was that sort of like?
Yeah, you know, great question, because there's so many different things that go into free agency, and I think for certain guys, like for myself, to think that I'm going to be coming into Jersey and running the first PP, and you know, like it obviously I would be I'd be a little jaded and maybe have had too many beers if I was thinking about that. But for myself, like I know what I bring, and in my conversations I had with Tom Fitzgerald, of when I've had with Sheldon Keefe over the last couple of days, is you know, they want Brendan Dillon to be Brendan Dillon.
Yep.
You know, they want me to come in and you know, do what I've done, and that's the player they're looking for. And you know, the guy that can skate, move pucks, you know, physicality, help on the penalty kill, like my staples. And then on top of that, you know, try and add as much as I can from the offensive side. And when I look at New Jersey and I look at the team makeup and I look at the right side on the blue line, you know, especially after incorporating in Pesci, I mean, at first I was like, okay, Dougie Hamilton, you know, stud, Simon Nemich, stud, John Marino, stud. Like, I think all these guys are solid. And then you go and add a Brett Pesci, I'm like,
I can't go wrong with that.
You play in the first pair, you play in the third pair, you're sitting pretty good.
Yep. And
it's funny, I think, diving into just a little bit of video and seeing those guys. It's funny, when you're in the Western Conference, I don't know for guys in the East, but in the West, you know, you're so ingrained in the Western teams and your division that you seem to play a billion times. And you don't even really know that much of the makeup of the East, right? I'm like, I know Jesper Bratt's a pretty juicy player, and I feel like he's dashing me up all the time whenever we play Jersey, or man, Jack Hughes seems like he's got the puck on a string all the time. But you just don't really know as in depth as I would know like an Edmonton Oilers or a Minnesota Wild team. So just watching these guys and how skilled they are going back for pucks, I'm talking about the defensemen now in Jersey. You know, I enjoy playing with those skill guys. I enjoy playing with the guys that, you know, the little that they like to put a little bit more risk in their game. And whether that's me having to take a couple extra two-on-ones or block the extra shot or protect that breakdown with a stick, whatever it might be, I'm prepared to do that. And I think that was something for myself and looking at like setting myself up for success to be able to help the team the best I can. You know, playing with any of those three guys, whoever management and the coaches decide to put me with, you know, I just can't see anything not being extremely fun and awesome for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of different combinations. I, of course, because I'm the nerd that I am, have spent a lot of time already thinking about this and sort of fantasy booking and trying to figure it out. I'm such a fan of Shimon Emmons' game in particular. I did like a big deep dive on him with Daryl Belfry last year, just getting into the tape and sort of all the stuff he was doing already as a 20-year-old rookie, basically. How kind of like sophisticated it was. I think he would be a great guy for to play with, because he already does such a good job of sort of manipulating forechecks, right? Kind of like dragging defenders over to him, creating space for his partners, and you know, I'm sure you could kind of reciprocate and create a bit of space for him as well. But you know, we saw them dabble a little bit with sort of the Hughes Nemitz sort of offensively oriented pair, and then maybe that would put you with Pesci in a more sort of defensive assignment. But yeah, you can't go wrong. But I think, you know, if you get into some conversations, maybe try and like plant a little bit of seed of like, you know,
give me
a little spin with that Nemitz guy.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can make something happen.
Well, that's just it, is how, you know, there's so many different ways. There's some teams that go the top four super heavy, play them 25 minutes a night.
Yep.
I think with our group, like we're so balanced, all six guys bring a little bit of a different you know, just different skill sets to the game, and I think all are going to be super, super helpful and useful for the New Jersey Devils. And That being said, you can, like you said, you can go a little bit more defensive minded on certain, you can go a little bit more offensive minded on certain, you can kind of have a bit of balance of all. You know, teams I played on in the past, I feel like with Winnipeg over the years, I've played with basically every guy, yep. You know, on the right side, left side. But that's the exciting part about it. And as for players, I mean, you know, it's not really up to us who we play with at the end of the day, but I'm just excited either way.
What's interesting is obviously New Jersey's kind of offensively a bit more of a supercharged version of it, but I did feel like last year the Jets placed more of an emphasis on like having a defenseman involved offensively, right? That was sort of a bit of a critique of mine over the years of like everything is running through the forwards and there's a time and place for that, but it's tough as a defender, I imagine, if you're not really asked to do much. Every time you get the puck, the coach is telling you, all right, dump it off the boards and out, don't actually try to make a play. Of course, that's going to have like a trickle-down effect on your confidence and on like what you wind up looking like. You guys were more involved. You scored the 8 goals, as you proudly said there. So you were kind of incentivized to shoot more and do more stuff. I think that's gonna help you a lot, I think, this season, because the Devils certainly asked their defensemen quite a bit to play that way. Just that team at its best needs to attack off the rush, right? I think what's interesting is that, but then the trickle-down effect of that then, for a defender, how do you kind of, if you're playing in a bit more of an open environment like that, how do you deal with sort of the, all right, we attack, the puck goes deep, the forwards are deep, all of a sudden it's coming back now. I imagine that has like sort of an effect on how you're playing that as well. Did that kind of go into your mind as sort of a guy who's going to be judged ultimately on defense in that environment? Because scoring goals is great, but I think, you know, the Devils were like 27th or 28th in goals against last season. I think the reason they bring you in, bring in Pesci, is they want to bring that number down. Kind of how does that weigh into your sort of decision-making in terms of, all right, this is my skill set, and then how that's going to fit with what I'm going to be asked to do in that specific environment?
Well, first and foremost, like I have to defend well. First and foremost, those are like the staples of my game. And you know, this year I was very fortunate to you know, score some goals. But ultimately, I want to take a lot of pride in that defensive game. And I think I can move well enough. I think I can skate and move pucks, you know, to those offensive D-men. And I still remember when, you know, watching Bernsey and watching Eric in San Jose. I mean, those guys took a lot of pride in their defensive game, like breaking pucks out, you know, good gaps, being able to attack basically with you know, turning the puck over and going transitioning the other way. So I learned so much, and even in Winnipeg, you know, you just learn from every D-man you play. Like, there's a reason why these six guys are playing in the NHL, right? Everyone does a little bit some better or worse or different than other guys, and there's a lot of ways to defend and get that job done too. Some of my best fun years stylistic wise were in San Jose with Pete DeBoer's system of like D-man. I don't care who you are, how big you are, how small you are, like you're getting up the ice, you're being an available option as the fourth man, whether that's off the rush or just to break the puck out of the zone. First touch D-man, you know, try not to get absolutely blown up in the corner, but you know, once that happens, you're getting up the ice, you're getting available. Of course there's a time and a place to get the puck out, just to, whether that's a punt or that's just off the glass. I saw it a lot, like Florida's D a lot of times, as skilled and ability to skate as all of them were. They're, like, sometimes that's just the best play. And it's funny that the ice in the NHL, which is just crazy to think at the best league in the world, is just garbage in a lot of places.
Especially if you're playing into June.
Well, you're playing into June. A lot of these have NBA, you know, buildings that are kind of sharing the ice at the hardwood. A lot of teams are usually really only at their game rink for games, and practices are all at a practice rink somewhere where the ice is pristine. And in Winnipeg, I don't know if it was Scheif or who, but we were at our game rink every day. Like that was where we were 98% of the season, and which is nice to kind of know the bounces and kind of get to know the boards, because there's, you know, like Joe Louis Arena back in the day. I mean, I feel like Datsyuk, Zetterberg, and Lidstrom almost had the exact little pane of, you know, yellow that it was going to bounce off of for a crazy backdoor or whatever. But looking back at the style of play and what Jersey will be and what, you know, Sheldon Keefe at least had a lot of Toronto doing, D get up in the rush. And it's not necessarily to say for the offensive side, but the more you get up in a play, if there is a transition, if there is a turnover, if there is a bobble, you're already up there. So your gap's closed. Hopefully you can, you know, kind of continue that play, whether that's a pinch in on the wall or the ability to use your stick to just at least take away an option that the other player wants to make. all are positive things. But for me, I find I'm at my best when I'm doing that. And sometimes it's funny if I get like a point early in a game where I make like a nice breakout play. Like I feel like my next shift, I'm trying backhand sauce and these crazy through the, like I find myself doing something crazy. And I've told my D partners this, and even myself on the bench, I'm like whether I make the play or not, the second time around, it's almost like, hey. Like I almost need a nice little icing, or I need to like just throw the puck down the ice just to like be like, hey, like get back to Brendan Dillon here. Because you know, there's risk involved anytime. Like there's, for every middle pop that goes through a forechecker's legs that ends up in a perfect breakout, there's one that just nicks a guy's skate and ends up coming in for a quick 2-on-1 at the net too. So time and place for everything, risk versus reward, time of the game. Is it game 7 Stanley Cup Finals in a 1-1 game, or is it game 5 where you're up 2-0? All these things come into play. And yeah, for myself, super pumped whatever way we go.
What I'm always so interested in whenever I talk to defensemen specifically is sort of how the game has evolved over the past, I'd say, decade or so, right? Like you came into the league in 2013, I believe, the shortened season.
Yep.
What the product in the NHL looked like then, and the way sort of the game was played, the responsibilities for especially defensemen in terms of like assignments, what you're being asked to play like compared to now, right? Obviously, yep, you're going to have a bit of sort of variability around the league, but for the most part, reference the Panthers, for example, who just won the cup, and I think a lot of teams are gonna be taking cues from them.
Yeah.
What I loved about them is like their defensemen, just no matter whether you're Gus Forsling as the number one, or Nico Mikola, or Dmitry Kulikov, you have the green light. So, you know, if it's the offensive zone, you're pinching along the wall trying to keep the puck in, you're immediately picking up a guy and surfing with him. All across the ice, basically, it's always north-south as opposed to just south, which I think, when you were coming up, you were probably taught a lot defensively, like...
Don't cross the red line.
Yeah, sag back, give the guy a bit of space, you know, live to fight another day in terms of not getting burned, and then trust that either you're going to get back support from a back checker or your goalie's going to make a save, right?
100%.
Now, all of a sudden, and it almost came back to bite them in that Stanley Cup final in particular, because Edmonton started doing exactly what you're saying, punting it out a little bit, getting that anchor play in the neutral zone, creating rush opportunities. But they won the cup playing that way, and I think we're going to see even more of it. That's fun for a viewer, for a defenseman.
Yeah.
What's that kind of like in terms of you've been along for this journey now as you're getting into a later stage of your career, even more sort of physical demand is being placed on your game, right? Because I think it's much more demanding and taxing
for
to
sure.
play that way.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, I've played every system from a 1-3-1 to a 1-1-3 to a 1-2-2 to, you know, D-men get back and just hard rim the puck around to the wingers. It's their job next to get it out to, hey, get back, shimmy shake, skate the puck out of the zone and make the next play. Like, there's so many different approaches you can take to it. The game changing from my first year, I mean, I think my style of play even, like, I feel like my first 5 to 10 games in the league, I was trying to set the hit record, and whether that was run out of position or go run the goalie, like that's, you want to make an impression, right? And I think there's a fine line because, you know, there's a reason why, this being the NHL, that players can make good plays and players are super quick and fast and catch on to 10 trends. And I think that's why when you see the Sidney Crosbys and the Connor McDavids and like these guys that continue to year after year with every video that's put on them, emphasis from coaches to put on, can still affect the game that incredibly. That's why you tip your cap to them. But for myself, I think like you have to learn how to skate. Like you've got to learn how to make plays on a rush. You know, like you don't want the forward lines thinking, oh my God, Brendan Dillon's out there. Like, okay, well, this puck's just getting iced every time or flipped out. Like you've got to be able to make that play, see the ice. And I think fortunately for myself to be able to play with some of these elite defensemen and see them and the way that, you know, they maybe approach the game or that maybe they see the game. Like that was one of the things these Eric and John Carlson both, like, okay, you know, you're doing, the Carolina Hurricanes are coming in, all out pressure, they're going to be all over you, 5 players to sometimes below the hash marks depending on where your forwards are, we're just going to have to chip it out, right? They've got speed forwards, they're all out pressure, you know, us trying to make that fancy, like it's just not going to work tonight. And I feel like those were the conversations before games. And then there's other teams, like we saw the Rangers this year or the LA Kings over the years. Their structure is the 1-3-1 or 1-1-3. They're going to sit back. As much as you would love to dangle through all of it, it's just not going to work. You're going to have to go and dump the puck, get a puck retrieval, force a turnover, maybe scoring the power play, and as boring as that may be, that's just how it's going to have to be. And I feel like being almost a chameleon-like approach to, as a, whether it's an NHL forward or an NHL defenseman, you have to be that, and you have to be willing to play different roles. You have to be willing to play with different partners or line mates. And like, even for me, I mean, talking about some of these guys like Nemec, or I'm 10 plus years older than this guy, right? So for me to be able to be like, yeah, you know, back in my day, well, that's kind of a useless conversation, because we're here and now, and, and like, just talking about what the NHL is today. I mean, next season, like you said, a lot of teams are going to be wanting to play like the Florida Panthers. This year, a lot of the D zones transitioned to what Vegas did, exactly, right? Where it was kind of a box with one guy who is, you're taking away the middle of the ice, you're taking away the prime real estate. And so there's going to be, I'm sure every team has their own little wrinkles that they do to it, but to just see how the game has evolved from my time, where the fourth liner was fourth lines were three tough, scary guys that you didn't want to look in the eyes, you know, and then, a lot of the D-man may have been over 6 feet, but they couldn't really skate a whole lot. And this is, I'm talking even before my time. But now everyone that's in the league can skate. Everyone that's in the league can make plays. Everyone in the league can maybe impact a second power play, whether that's a shot or, you know, whatever it could be. And, just continuing to add to your game every year is something that I try to do, that I think everybody tries to do. You see the skates that were out here now, when you got the, you know, Connor Bedards and the Kent Johnsons and the Macklin Celebrinis. And I mean, you know, that's the other thing about BC is hockey's alive and well out here.
Yes.
That's for sure. So yeah, hopefully can be a big part of the New Jersey Devils game plan, whatever way it goes.
Let's take our break here, and then when we come back, we'll jump right back in and keep chatting about a variety of different topics I have still for you. You're listening to the Hockey PDOcast, streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, we're back here on the Hockey PDOcast, joined today by Brendan Dillon. Brendan, before we went to break, you were sort of talking about this idea of every offseason trying to add different layers to your game, right? Trying to always get better, the pursuit of that. I'm really interested in kind of digging into that a little bit and unpacking it with you, because that's how, you know, how you and I officially got into contact with each other, right? I was posting all these mixtapes of like Devon Taves sort of defending entries,
Jacob Slavin,
all this stuff, right? I think stuff has certainly caught your eye as a defender, trying to sort of incorporate some of these little tendencies and effective tricks into your game. I mentioned how we've kind of come tactically along over the past 10 years. Part of that has been sort of with this statistical evolution, right, as well, right? And I think we sort of know, like, all right, what teams are looking for in terms of maybe taking fewer penalties, maybe, you know, trying to get the puck to certain areas of the ice, a lot of this sort of preparation stuff and game plan. How does that kind of seep into your preparation in the offseason, and then in terms of either stuff you're trying to work on, or even during the season, like what sort of game planning is going into it? Kind of, let's get into that process a little bit and sort of what that looks like for you now in 2024, where you have access to all these different things that maybe in 2013 when you were first starting weren't either as available or as accepted necessarily.
Well, it's a great point, because I think that was just the biggest thing right there, is the accessibility to see all these things. And I love hockey. I love watching hockey. I love playing hockey. I love talking hockey. So, you know, watching playoffs, fortunately, I'm usually hopefully in the playoffs and able to play, but then once, you know, I'm eliminated or we lose out, it's just, I'm watching, seeing like what, you know, what makes a guy like Devon Taves so good. And, you know, we played Colorado firsthand this year, and I'm fortunate to know Devon and know he's from the area and skated with him a few times. And he's just so underrated with his stick and his ability to close and his ability to, you know, kind of surf up on forwards and kind of almost catch him off guard. Like, geez, where did he come from? And, you know, we talk about the Jacob Slavins all the time. And I'm going to be, you know, picking Brett Pesce's ear all year this year as to like, how can I get better at these certain things? And it's just that. I mean, there's so much opportunity, whether it's ice times or skills coaches or, you know, people like yourself that put together these videos where you're like, wow, I got to try that. You know, I got to look at that. And whether that's stylistic play of coaches that have taught that to these guys, or some of their partners. I mean, you know, for Taser, I mean, he's got a pretty decent right-hand man there in Cale Makar, who I'm sure when you're just talking hockey with these guys, they're so smart. They know the game so well, they know how to read the game. And sometimes not everyone's, whether it's, you know, from the puck skills or the skating, able to do them all. But I think safe is death in the most kind of vague way when it comes to hockey. If you want to sit back and kind of, we're talking about what the game was like maybe 10 years ago, to just sit back and let the play come to you. I mean, every top player in the league wants space. Every top player wants time. And you give these guys, you know, they're going to make those seam passes or sauce passes or plays through you or around you if you give them that. And if you at least make a player, a lot of the defending these days is in groups of five, you know, yeah, a defensive zone, you're having layers, having, you know, that second man in, a little bit of help. And it's just amazing how it has evolved. And I think the biggest thing is video these days, watching it, trying and practice the next day. If you screw up, it's practice. And, you know, you've got still 82 games where you can try to perfect it for.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, you know, I'm trying to evaluate players like yourself, kind of your performance, who's responsible in particular for what. And I think one of the roadblocks we bump into a little bit, and we've certainly made advancements along the way, but it's like, who's responsible for defensive results in particular, right? Because you're right, it's a five-man effort generally. Like, I used to specifically try to isolate defenders in terms of how you're protecting your blue line against entries, whether you're forcing dump-ins or whether you're, you know, you're cleanly breaking it up or whether the guy's just carrying it against you. And then as you watch more and you kind of like immerse yourself in it, you realize it almost says as much about the forwards you're playing with sometimes in terms of whether they're providing that back pressure, whether you're just being left on an island and then you're having to concede the zone, whether you're incentivized by your certain coach or system to actually aggressively try to break that up, even if it means for sure getting danced and giving up a breakaway, right? All this certain stuff goes into it. It's very tough to isolate. I think the trick for me is process versus results for defense, right? Because you're going to play the game and then you're going to go back and watch a tape and try to kind of figure it out. You're going to have the stat sheet of what happened that night. But it's tricky because you almost are purely judged, I think, at least from the outside, maybe on the inside in terms of conversations with coaches is different, on results. Like, if you're a defender, if the puck went into your own net, that means whether you're directly responsible or not, you got the minus and you're going to be judged on that.
Yep.
And then you could have been in the right place. You could have right choice, right decision-making, right technique, great position, puck just goes in, goalie doesn't make a save, it's your fault. You could also just be chasing the play, totally out of position, bleeding chance after chance, goalie makes a save behind you, hey, you did your job, you get off the ice, you didn't give up a goal against. And it's, I don't have an answer for here. And I think that's sort of this like elusive thing that people like myself, people smarter than me certainly, are going to keep trying to kind of track down over the next couple of years. That's sort of, I think, the next frontier for us. But that's so interesting from a defensive perspective in terms of like who gets credit for what, who gets punished, who gets responsibility, and kind of how that's all divvied up.
Yeah, it's as
I'm
you
sure
said
you have a lot of complex.
Well, because it's funny, right? Like the advanced analytics has come in massively over the last little bit. Certain teams I've been on huge into it. Certain teams like just get the job done kind of thing. And I think like with anything, there's got to be a fine line for both. I think advanced analytics are great and you could take from it. I don't know if you can judge a player entirely on that. And then there's also something to be said about, you know, the eye test and watching a hockey game and watching a couple games in a row and seeing, you know, is this guy maybe battling through an injury? Is this guy playing
Especially in the playoffs, right?
Is someone, you know, is he playing with a new D partner, new line mates? Did he just get traded somewhere and he's trying to get used to the new systems? There's so many different things. Is it a back-to-back? Was there trap? Like, there's so many different things that go on in a hockey locker room that, of course, the media doesn't hear about or doesn't know about. And a lot of guys are big boys, and, you know, they're never going to use excuses, or they're not going to come out in the media after and they, my Corsi sucked yesterday because I, you know, my kid was up till 3 a.m. and I got in and I was pissed off because I got cut off and my car got like, there's so many different things.
I think you should try that next year.
Yeah. Seriously. Well, yeah, it's amazing how much stuff goes on. And, similar to what you were saying with styles of play too, right? There was a time I remember with Washington when Peter Laviolette came in, and like the first 10 games of the year, we were going to try this new thing where we were just literally D-men. You stay in between the dots, buy time. I don't care if it's a 3-on-2 or a 5-on-2 or a 2-on-2. Like, you're holding the middle of the ice. We're letting our forwards work back and kind of back pressure. And I still remember us as a group of 6 or 7, whatever D-men we had up. And after games, like teams were just walking into the zone, stopping up, hitting the fourth man, making their plays. I mean, you know, you have guys like Matt Barzal and Mika Zibanejad and Panarin and these guys time, like they're going to make these plays. And I remember us going in and be like, Lavi, this isn't working. This isn't working. And finally we changed it. And I give him credit for just being able to talk with us about it and see what we're seeing. And of course there was the Boston Bruins or Carolina where it's like, they are coming at you for they're skating forwards. You're not even going to try and cross the red line, let alone the blue line. And if, you know, you get danced or puck goes in and there's an odd man rush, well, that's why you got a goalie and another D-man to kind of, you know, almost give yourself the least possible chance for them to just sit back and make the play they want to make. And yep. I don't think a player or a coach are ever going to come in too and say, well, this is why maybe I'm giving up more chances because I'm told to do this, or I'm going to throw my coach under the bus or throw my players under the bus. Because there's a reason why these coaches are in the NHL. There's a reason why players are in the NHL, but there is a bit of hockey sense that goes into things too. And, you know, whether you and your partner talking about certain things or the forward lines talking about it with the D on faceoffs, for instance, okay, here we're, you know, we're exiting out the opposite side of the ice, everyone knows the puck's going to go there, and if all it takes is one guy to go the opposite way and now you're screwed. It's basically, yep, you know, the whether a turnover or 5-on-4 for a portion of the time. And it's something when you think about how, again, the game changing, like it literally changes every year. It's when it comes to player evaluations, a lot of guys now that I've played with have become scouts or become, you know, whether players a person player personnel or something in management. And I love having these conversations because a lot of players want to be coached. Right. Like, we want to get better. We want to learn how, you know, some teams I've played on have had like a chance list. Like you win the game yesterday 2-1, come in the next day, and from the first period to the end of the third period there's chance lists. You know Dmitry pinched on the first goal, so Dylan came over, didn't take away the passing lane, and, you know, goal scored.
Yep.
and for everybody to see. So right, there's a little bit of humbling that goes into it too, right? Because we all know at the end of the day if we had a good game or if we had a bad game or if there's a certain play we wanted to come, you know, wish we had back or a different decision we could have made. And hockey's so fast on top of all this, yeah, and you play so many games in a short period of time, the back-to-backs, the travel, that if you get hung up too much on one game or the emphasis on one really good game or one really bad game, you know, I heard from some of the guys that have played for the Leafs, it's kind of like the media, right? Like, you're usually never as good as they are telling you are, and you're usually never as, yes, bad as they're usually telling you are. Yeah. So, finding that fine line for whether that's how you're judging a player, how you're looking at a player. I mean, I feel like a guy's salary is a big part of it too, right? Like, oh, is this guy making $10 million or is this guy making his entry level? Usually sways people's ideas, yeah, too.
Yeah, I love that. Like Peter Laviolette, it's like, all right, stay back, stay between the dots. And then you have jokers like me being like, ah, Brendan Dillon actually gave up 6 carries on 8 entries again.
Exactly. And then I go to a team the next year or the year before, and right, it was like, oh, he's playing with Pete DeBoer, where we were bull rushing at the blue line. Yep. We were swinging in on those. We were trying to defend. It's like, oh, wow. Like, what did he do? Did he not work out that summer? Did he not, did he not skate all year? Was he not, like, why did you change that? And those are, I think a lot of players that I played in the American Hockey League with may have been more talented or skilled or speed or, you know, faster, bigger, stronger, whatever it might be, but the coachability factor is a big part. Mm-hmm. Like, coaches want to know what they can get out of a certain player.
They can trust you for sure.
That they, yep, can trust you, that they can trust when they put you on the ice, you're going to do what the team has talked about. And that's just a big part of it.
All right, we got like 10 more minutes here. I want to end with some fun. So cool. I've got a list of superlatives here that I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you about. You give it a little bit of thought and then just rattle off the names that come to your head, all right?
All right.
Hardest guy in the league to defend off the rush.
I mean,
other than McDavid.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, McDavid, for as good as he's talked about and as good as he's praised, he's still that much better. Yeah, like, yeah. I still think he deserves more credit. It's kind of like what Crosby's done over the years, right? Like, for whatever it's been, 15 years. Like, I played with Jumbo for all those years that I even think those guys deserve even more credit. But someone off the rush that's like sneaky.
So maybe someone that like kind of has you feeling super uncomfortable about even like shiftiness, right? And maybe not necessarily pure blazing north-south speed, but someone where you're like, I have no idea which way this guy's going to go. Yeah. He's just got me on skates right now.
Yeah. I mean, I played with some pretty talented guys there in Winnipeg, you know, the Kyle Connors of the world, the, you know, Nikolai Ehlers.
Yeah, this is a Nikolai Ehlers fan podcast. So
I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Nikolai Ehlers. So yeah, I'm a big fan of his. I think all those guys are, I'd say someone that maybe doesn't get enough credit that, I feel like every time I played him was Jesper Bratt. I think he's nasty. You know,
when he gets that hip swivel going.
Oh, yeah. I'm so happy to be passing him. The puck is supposed to have him coming on me. He's a big guy. I guess I can give you one more from the, I think Panarin too. Like he's just so deceptive.
He's just dancing out there. Right?
Yeah. He creates so much room for himself that, you know, he could be 1-on-4 and he's still like, whether it's his, you know, just how he holds the puck on a stick, he can shoot, pass, dangle. Real, really big fan of those guys.
All right, best player getting their shot off even when you feel like you're in position.
I mean, again, like there's a reason why this guy's scored 60. And yeah. Like, I mean, Matthews is up there. I mean, I think KC, like Kyle Connor in Winnipeg, like he doesn't need much. He doesn't need much to get that off. I'm trying to think of other guys. As a Western Conference, 11 of the past 12 years is...
I heard Philip Forsberg. From other defensemen is a nightmare because he's so strong, but also like he's comfortable releasing from like any position around his feet that's out wide, right? You almost can't throw him a bad pass and he can just get good velocity, right?
Yeah, Forsberg, incredible. I mean, Kaprizov in Minnesota, like he's pretty incredible. Like some of his goals, he's like these guys just don't need much to put that where the puck where they want to put it.
All right, next one. Toughest to handle down low.
Toughest to handle down low, like a guy like JT Miller, for instance, right. I think is solid. Like he's super, bulldog. Like he's a bulldog, like he's just like competitive. But
have
at the same time,
in a corner with Crosby.
I have. I mean, granted, I've only had to do it a couple times a year, which is nice. Like he's. I mean, Mikko Rantanen, you know, another guy that's just like these guys are big and strong, but they're so skilled and can like they just don't need much to make that play. Like Rantanen. I mean, especially after playing him in playoffs, like you get so much respect for these guys. I think those guys.
I like that. All right. This kind of goes similar to hardest to defend, but most exhausting to defend.
Whether most exhausting,
kind of
craftiness,
whether it's just like motor.
Yeah.
Or someone where you're just like, oh man, I got to shift against this guy. I know he's not going to let me off the hook here.
Yeah. I mean, someone that might be under like that Joel Eriksson neck.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this guy's in the front of the net and no matter how many, I could give this guy 50 cross checks. He's still going to stay there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just move, you know? And not only is he not just going to, he's not going to move. Like, he's probably going to give it back to me, which I feel like is similar to Miller. Like JT Miller is a guy who, like, he can make that unbelievable seam play, but he can also come and bury you from behind, bury you, like, in front of the net. He can make all these plays. Tom Wilson, like, you know, I was fortunate to play with him, but just a dog on a bone, you know, forecheck and never let you off the hook. But, you know, these guys are scoring 20 goals a year and, you know, those are having that combination of all of them. I think any GM in the league would want any of those guys on their team.
I like that. I had trickiest forechecker to sort of try to break out against here. It's probably more of a team level thing, though, right? And I feel like Carolina is probably the answer just because, although on one hand, I guess you could argue it's like, it sort of simplifies your route tree a little bit there because you sort of almost know, like, all right, it's max pressure. We got
max pressure.
Coming, so
like, just... I just need, if it's almost like a quarterback in the pocket, like, I know I've got like 1/1000 and then I got to get the puck moving. Yeah. Otherwise, there's a guy either hitting me, stick on me, or the second guy coming in. I mean, there's certain teams too. Like Nashville was very good at that last year too. Like Boston's a good forechecking team that, you know, even their top end guys, the Pasternak's, the Marchands, like they're getting in on the forecheck. And I think that's, I don't know if it's even underrated anymore, but like a team's forecheck and how they turn pucks over that way and apply pressure. Like for me as a D-man, when I'm like, okay, I got to go back and get this puck again. Like I'm either going to get hit or some super speedy guys coming in on me. Like that's really tough for us defensemen to do.
I like that. All right. Well, that's all I had there for superlatives. We got a little story time here. So you got to play with 41-year-old Jaromir Jagr while you were a rookie, right? Yeah. Before he got traded to Boston. You also got on that same team to play with 42-year-old Ray Whitney, I believe.
Yep.
I imagine his prep was pretty ridiculous in terms of getting that 42-year-old body ready to go.
Oh yeah.
You got Joe Thornton, obviously everyone on that same Sharks team.
Yep.
And then you got a little Ovechkin in there as well for a couple of years.
I've got a heck of a stick rack at home.
Yeah.
I've got a heck of a signed hockey stick rack at home.
I guess that's one of the perks of being around as long as you have and kind of going around, right? You get a little little taste of everything along the way.
I've just, hockey's given me everything, man. I'm just so fortunate to do what I do. And I think that's just, when you can approach the game, and a lot of the, I mean, basically almost all the teammates I've had, like, there's a reason why guys get to the NHL. They're so motivated, so competitive. But to see these guys that are that good, and, you know, after 15, 20 plus years of playing, like, a lot of those guys still having fun. Like, Jumbo's the guy that would come in on Christmas Day just to, like, tape his stick. Like, you know, like, you're like kind of like, hey, like, Jumbo, how's your holidays? He's like, oh, yeah, it was great. You know, I just brought my son. We just went for a twirl on the 25th. And, you know, on Christmas Eve, we were like, ah, I don't know, maybe we'll go in. And, like, these guys just love the game. Yeah. Like, Ovi, I mean, the guy scored, what, 800 goals now. And every time he scores, it's still like it was his first. And, you know, they're great guys. You know, whether you're the guy that just got called up or you're the guy that's been around for 1,000 games, just as long as they have, you know, they all treat you with respect. And, you know, Zdeno Chara, to get to learn from him for the year in Washington was like mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like his approach. I mean, he at that time had to have been around 40, maybe a little older, and was still shredded in the gym every day, working his bag off. You know, a lot of those, Patty Marleau, like, you know, most games all time, Seattle Thunderbird alumni, proud of those guys. Yeah. They're just, it's so many just fun times. You know, all were such amazing teammates to me, and yeah, super thankful.
I love that. All right. Well, I think we hit everything on my list here that I had. Generally, whenever I have a guest on, I'm like, do you want to plug some stuff? I think you don't really have that much to plug other than maybe tune into some New Jersey Devils games next
year. Yeah. Devils coming to Vancouver. I haven't even looked at the schedule enough to see when they come to Van, but yeah, a little cheaper for me this year. Just got to pay tickets for one game.
Nice.
For all the family and friends. But yeah, I mean, yeah, excited. Yeah, tune into, I guess, Sportsnet show, you know, your podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, maybe when you guys are back in town. I haven't looked at the schedule yet either. It just got released, I believe, yesterday. Yeah. Maybe we'll have you back on, or we'll do something again when you're in town. I know, obviously, during the season, a bit busier, but looking forward to keeping up with you. As I said off the top, I'm going to do a couple plugs here. Hop into the PDOcast Discord. Invite link is in the show notes. Get in there, and you can chat with all the other listeners. Drop that 5-star review wherever you listen to the show. This is a great time to show some love to us at the end of the season. And as I said off the top, this is the last show of the season. I believe I counted through this. We did 150 shows this season, which seems like a lot. But honestly, as you were saying, hockey's given us everything. It was so fun. The season just flew by for me. The playoffs were a bit of a grind because I was just watching every game like 2 or 3 times. So the workload got a bit hectic there. But I've had a bit of a chance to breathe here. So season was great. I wanted to thank all the listeners here on the way out for tuning into those shows, allowing me to keep doing this. It's an honor and a privilege. So looking forward already to doing it again next season. I'm going to go to the beach now and enjoy the sun here for a few days. In the off season, maybe I'll get on the treadmill a little bit or lift some weights, but unlike you, I don't have a season to prepare necessarily.
Yeah.
In September, I'll start putting the tape back on, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, it's training camps in September. You got till September 1, whatever way you want to go. Yeah, it's the world's your oyster when the sun's out in Vancouver, that's for sure.
It is. It's so beautiful here. So I'm going to take the full advantage of that. And love you all. Thank you for listening to the Hockey PDOcast, and we'll be back in September with plenty more here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.